You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We're jammed, man. We got a ton of stuff to get to on the program today. Steve Merrill's going to join us as always, although we're shaking the lineup a little bit today. Steve Merrill will join us a little bit later on in the program. We'll talk some Major League Baseball, and it's great to have baseball back. They've said it before, and I'll say it again. The Major League Baseball regular season is a marathon. It's not a sprint, but the pace is starting to pick up right now. And we'll take a look. I'm in an NL Central frame of mind tonight. So we're going to take a look at the division chase that's going on. The Milwaukee Brewers are up 5.5. Brew Crew on the board this evening, laying minus 165. We'll take a look at the Brew Crew. We got the Cubs and the Orioles on the board. St. Louis Cardinals are actually lurking, and Pittsburgh Pirates are just like a one winning streak away from getting back into this thing as well. Trade deadline around the corner at the end of the month, which means football's around the corner as well. I'm getting a big kick out of these NFL team-by-team previews, and I've noticed a theme, generally. If I'm positive about the team, then I get positive feedback. If I'm negative about the team, then it gets nastier than a Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor press conference. Today, we're breaking down the Minnesota Vikings on the program. Vikings had a tough year last year. Vikings have been an ATM machine, man, all right? One of the best bets in football for the last 3 years have been the Minnesota Vikings. The question is, are they going to be one of the best bets in football again this year? Stay tuned, and I'll let you know my thoughts on the upcoming Vikings season. Take a look at the numbers and the odds and all that other type of stuff. We got Cody Saftick. Cody Saftick is going to join us in the studio. We're going to talk some UFC, man. UFC goes to Scotland. It's a Sunday afternoon card. Nothing wrong with spending a Sunday afternoon watching people punch each other in the face. So we'll get some picks from Cody Saftick, one of the best, you know. Cody lives for this stuff, man. Very analytical. So we'll get Cody's thoughts. I got to tell you, man, I gave you guys earlier in the week, I told you that I loved Joanne Calderwood at plus 225, plus 250, down to plus 160 now. Man, I wish I had money in my account earlier in the week and I would have been able to bet it, or I wish I just would have shut up and not told anybody, but I don't get paid to get shut up. I don't get paid. I can't tell people I like Calderwood. Love Calderwood. Calderwood's not losing this fight. She's going to beat. She's going to beat Cynthia Calvillo. So speaking of fights, the circus continues as today is the final stop on the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather press junket. They did Los Angeles, they did Toronto, they did Brooklyn yesterday, and they wrap it up in London. I expect fireworks, literally and figuratively, this evening in London. This is the last face-to-face before, you know, the next press conference is a week before the fight or whatever. You know, the jury is in, and people were underwhelmed by yesterday's performance in Brooklyn. But it seems to me that people really only seem to be overwhelmed when Conor McGregor is up there getting pops. And Conor didn't get the same pops in Brooklyn as he did in Toronto because, you know, let's be real. The crowd in Toronto was essentially an NHL crowd, all right? Who are they pulling for, so to speak? Now, this fight is unbelievable in the sense that it's so polarizing. It angers people so much, man. Some people think it's a sham and it's a circus, such as myself. Yet, I can't look away. You know, it's one of these deals. Like, what's the sleaziest thing you've ever done in your life? Like, what's like you ever woke up the next day, you're like, oh, man, that was pretty bad last night. That was pretty bad. That's how I feel after watching these press conferences all the time. I'm like, oh, that was bad. And it's even worse that I actually somewhat enjoyed it. The question is, though, has Conor McGregor crossed the line throughout the week? And you know what? Conor fans, no doubt that are ripping me as they're watching this on YouTube right now, are saying no. Because Conor's a lot like Donald Trump. Donald Trump said, you know, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and, you know, it wouldn't change anything. People would still vote for me and love me. And he's right. He's right about that. And Conor McGregor could also shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and people would say that's just Conor trying to sell the fight. My question to you is, has Conor McGregor crossed a line? Now listen, Conor's always been brash. Conor's trying to sell this, and that's what Conor does. For a 28-year-old kid, you know, the guy's got a lot of street hustle in him, and he knows how to push the buttons, and he knows how to push the buttons on an ATM machine as well. But there was no need for some of his comments this week. And I caught on to this early, all right? I caught on to this early with the racial undertones, as they call it, the dog whistle, so to speak. Not full out racist, but, you know, sort of the wink, wink type of deal. You know, you can't call Floyd Mayweather a boy all the time, all right? You can't say, dance for me, boy. You can't look at his 14-year-old daughter and sort of grab your junk. You can't say to, hey, all the black bitches out there, and then grab your junk. You can't look at the crowd in Brooklyn and go, I'm half black from the waist down. And Conor McGregor believes this. And I don't think Conor McGregor is racist, all right? I don't think Conor McGregor is racist, per se. I think he's like Bill Maher. And, you know, the jackass talk show host, Bill Maher. Bill Maher, it's well known that Bill Maher sleeps with a lot of black chicks. So, therefore, he figures since he sleeps with a lot of black chicks, he can drop the N-bomb. He can say what he wants. He's got a hall pass, so to speak. Listen, I went out with a black chick for a long time, all right? There ain't no hall pass. You know, you're sleeping with a black chick. It doesn't make you black. And Conor McGregor thinks because he listens to Notorious B.I.G. that, oh, it's all cool, man. I like rap. It's all good. I mean, we can go down the list of the racial undertones, not to mention he goes on the Jimmy Kimmel show and he calls him a monkey. Like, at what point do we say, yeah, you know what? Maybe this is a little bit racial. But Conor McGregor and you fanboys, you've got your lips, wrapped around him so tightly that it doesn't matter. Oh, it's Conor being Conor. You know what? Cam Newton gets racist hate mail because he does a Superman pose. Yet, you know what? I guess it's okay for Conor McGregor because it's just Conor being Conor. And, you know, this is where we're at with this fight right now. It's like, you know what? Conor McGregor is a big jerk and stuff, but Floyd Mayweather beat his wife up. So, you know, that's where we're at right now. And as I stated, why don't we just call the fight the cheater versus the beater? You know what? Yeah. And, you know, you got a big problem if you're Conor McGregor. You got a big problem, Conor. Like, it's very hard to be the biggest douche on a stage when you're on a stage with Drake and with Floyd Mayweather. But no, you've managed to do it, dude. You've managed to do it. But ole, 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 it's great. You know what? Floyd Mayweather is wrong about a lot of things, but he was right about Conor this week. He has been a circus clown. The question is he a racist? I don't think Conor McGregor is racist, but I do think he's been blowing the whistle all week long, and he knows what he's saying. What do you think? Game Time Decisions continues.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We're joined by Cody Saftick, Fight Network's Cody Saftick. You see him on the Fantasy Sports Network with Pat Mayo. And Cody Saftick is also a partner in Red Heat and Rage Racing. Diamond Conflict will be racing his second race this upcoming Tuesday. Unfortunately, we've got the damn 8 hole again, Cody.
Yes.
Unreal, man.
I'll tell you what, Conflict Diamond got some potential here, but yeah, we're drawing from a bad position.
Again.
Which is why, as you know, and horse racing is a fantastic sport, but there's no better sport than fighting where it's one-on-one, because I don't have to worry about the position here, you know? I can just kind of jockey for one of the two people.
Yeah, you only have to worry about one guy. So, yes, there's all the talk this week about Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, yet there is a UFC card in Scotland. It's Sunday afternoon, but quickly on this, I opened up the show about Conor McGregor's somewhat racial undertones, and yeah, it's not somewhat racial undertones. He's been racist all week, all right? Let's call it out for what it is. You know, is Conor McGregor a racist? I don't think so. And conversely, I think Floyd Mayweather wouldn't mind if there was 15,000 people in white hoods and the KKK showed up if they paid for this fight, because he understands that the white-black thing sells and all that type of stuff. But, you know, to me, you know, I think Conor just crossed a couple of lines, Cody, that didn't need to be crossed. You're going to sell the fight anyways. there's a lot of smack you can talk to Floyd without venturing in. And what's amazing about this, Cody, is he sort of walked into this racial thing. Yeah. And instead of shutting it down or staying away from it, hey, let me talk about this. And you just sort of see him sinking, man, like on the stage yesterday. And you even need to see Dana. Like, someone's got to pull him aside and say, bro, you can't say these things. Like, you're in America. You can't go on the Jimmy Kimmel show and call Floyd Mayweather a monkey. Yeah, and, like, the fact that he gets a free pass, it doesn't surprise me. Because all you in the media, you all worship him. You're all fans. All you guys in the media, that's why you all suck, all right? That's why you all suck. You're fans, man. You won't call him out because, oh, you might not interview him. You might not look at me in a media scrub. I don't give a crap, man. He's been spewing racist crap all week, and you're all pathetic for not calling him out on it.
Yeah, it just feels
floor
like,
is yours.
Well, it just feels like he's been playing the, you know, how close to the line can I get, and did he cross the line? Well, that's certainly a conversation that maybe, you know, his entourage or his people need to have with him. But the same goes, you can go out there and you can say something, and is it racially charged? Very perhaps. Is he a racist? I don't think so, but the things he's saying, are they cringeworthy? Absolutely. But you got to look at a role reverse. If someone went out there and called him a potato eater, was that racist? No, I can't be racist to him because, you know, it's just a joke. Well, is it a joke? Some people are going to take this stuff offensively.
Yeah, but nobody did that.
No, and that's the thing.
But Floyd hasn't done that to him.
Exactly. Now, he's going out there. Now, truthfully, what I believe is that he comes out in Toronto, right? And he goes in, he has a great performance, and he goes and he gets the crowd behind him, and he's, you know, talking these good lines. But he says certain things like, hey, you know, pay the IRS. And he says certain things like, you know, hey, you know, insinuates that you put your hands on your woman, insinuates that you're completely broke, tells him you can't read, and he's getting these great pops out of the crowd. So now he's coming into day three. He's used all his material up in day one. He used the material that he had left for day two, he had a great pop. Now day three, he's got nothing left to say. So he jumps the shark, and that was unfortunate to see, but he's just picking at straws. And what you're saying is you see him just sinking and sinking and sinking on stage. It's improv. It's improv comedy. Only the thing is, he's not
I see him sinking, and I see Floyd growing.
Yeah, okay, but
it's like, you know.
Sure, sure.
Connor's trying to poke somebody who he wants to be, who he looks up to. Floyd knows this. There's a saying on the street, you can't hustle a hustler. And that's why I thought it was gold when Floyd just said, you a con man. You're a con man. You don't even belong here. You're a con man. Like, you can't con a con man. And Floyd's a con man. So how, and Connor's coming with this crap. And I'm telling you, it's just, you know, I personally, though, people love Connor so much, they think it's great. Oh, hi, I made the IRS. Who cares? Yeah. Donald Trump fought for bankruptcy 3 times. He's the president of the United States right now. Yeah. Oh, here. Oh, he owes money to the IRS. Oh, I know. But anyways, it is polarizing. It sucks people in, and I can't help it. It's a train wreck. But I hope that Floyd really humiliates him and embarrasses him. Like, but it won't matter because Conor McGregor got humiliated and embarrassed against Nate Diaz, and doesn't matter. Blah, 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 blah. I'm this. I'm not. You lost.
I get it. But look at the other opponents that Floyd's been fighting. The Andre Burrows of the world. The Roberto Guerreros of the world.
What, the Medanas of the world? The Oscar De La Hoyas of the world?
I'm talking about them. So I get that Conor McGregor probably should not be in the
fight. So who did Conor McGregor beat? Chad Mendes? I saw Brendan Shaw pimping it like it was a big deal. He's like, Eddie Alvarez is one of the world. If he can do this to Eddie Alvarez, who's going to do to Floyd? It's like, dude. Really, Schaub? Really?
It's a
like,
show.
How is he even
Dave,
on that broadcast?
Right, but
anyways,
it's a show. They're trying to bring in this entertainment.
It's a crap show.
They're trying to sell the fight to people, and it seems to be working. The fact that we're talking about this, when did we ever talk about any of Floyd's other opponents? The fact is, it's at least dominating headlines. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, it's dominating headlines. They're trying to go out there, and they're trying to sell pay-per-views. Fact is, they sold a lot of pay-per-views with Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao never said a goddamn word the entire time. Now
exactly.
You have someone who's going to go out there and you're going to talk. Listen, do I think Floyd beats him up? Absolutely. Do I think it's an easy payday for Floyd? Absolutely. But Floyd needs Connor. And like you said,
does
Floyd care about all these comments? No, because he's just trying to sell the fight.
They need each other.
But this is not good for selling a fight. This is the kind of thing that people boycott a fight over. So I don't know. It seems like he's kind of crossed the line just a little bit, you know?
All right. We're getting worked up here. We're worked up. All right. Cody, UFC Glasgow.
Scotland.
All right, so let's start off with Gunnar Nelson and Ponzi here in the main event. It's been a lot of line movement I've noticed over the last couple of days. I've seen Gunnar as low as minus 265, 165 right now.
Yeah, it seems to be bouncing.
He was over 200 earlier in the week.
No, it's just one of those cases where you look at Santiago Ponzinibbio and then you realize, why am I betting money against this guy? I can see why people like Gunnar Nelson. I absolutely see it. But at the same time, just because you like Gunnar Nelson, you can't take away anything from the Pons, you know?
Yeah.
And Santiago Ponzinibbio is red hot right now. He's big, he's strong, he's agile, he's a good striker. striker. The reason why
better striker.
The much better striker. And then I think when you look at performances from Gunnar Nelson, it's like, okay, well, how can somebody beat this guy? You got to be physical. You look at a guy like Rick Story. Rick Story fought him in a five-rounder. He's able to stuff the takedowns, beat him up standing, break him down, wins the decision. When I look at a guy like Santiago Ponzinibbio, training out of American Top Team, he's got fantastic wrestling coaches. He's got a fantastic crew of guys to work with. I mean, he's going to be red hot. Now look at Gunnar Nelson. This is a guy that notoriously trains with one Conor McGregor. Only McGregor's gone. And John Kavanaugh, I mean, where's his head at? And half your training partners, like your boxing coach is gone. All these guys are gone, yet you're getting prepared for what is perhaps the biggest fight of your career, certainly right now. It just doesn't spell why Gunnar Nelson would be a 2-1 favorite. So like you say, line's coming in on him.
You're making me want to bet on Ponzi right now.
Ponzi's not a bad option. The only reason why I am sticking with Gunnar Nelson is the same reason I've been using this logic in a lot of these five-round fights lately. Look at Whitaker, Yoel Romero. There's no doubt that the better athlete's Yoel. There's no doubt that, you know, the stronger man's Yoel Romero. But it's five rounds, and at some point, Whitaker's going to have a better gas tank. He'll be able to figure him out. You're looking at Gunnar Nelson, he just needs to get a couple takedowns here. He doesn't need to go out there and dominate him from start to finish. He might lose the first round. He might lose the third round. But he's got to get those takedowns, work that game, get this guy tired. You know who has gone five rounds? Gunnar Nelson. You know who hasn't gone five rounds? Santiago Ponzinibbio. Yeah. So get this guy tired. 160, I like that price a lot better. 2-1, I would not touch it. But I am feeling Gunnar Nelson in the main event.
All right, great breakdown right there. Although you reeled, that's good TV, Cody. You reeled everyone in with Ponzi. But I like Gunner.
But, yeah, so then.
But I like. But now you can play both roads. So now next week, Scott, I told you, hit a Ponzi. You couldn't sleep on this
I told you don't sleep on him. Gunner wins. It's like, well, I had Gunner. No, I mean, listen, right. It's a competitive main event.
Next fight, there's been a lot of live movement here. The money's starting to come in on the underdog. I had to do a double and a triple check when I saw this number earlier in the week. I was like, no, there's no way Cynthia Cavillo is minus 275 favorite against Calderwood.
It's high solid.
Now it's starting to find its water a little bit. You can still get Calderwood in the plus 160, plus 170 range. Of course, Calderwood is fighting in her home country. She's a Scot. She's proud Scot. She's got a ton of heart, this woman. She's greatly improved. She used to just sort of be tough.
Yep.
But now she used to be tough physically, but she was kind of mentally fragile, right? You know, she'd cry, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know what's going on in my life, and she's a killer now, this girl. She's got a lot of flaws, she gets hit a lot and stuff, but you've seen the wars that she's been in.
Oh, yeah.
She's much more athletic than people give her credit for. She's got a great chin, she's got great heart, and, you know, Calvillo is very primitive and raw. She's 5-0, man. She only has two fights in the UFC. It was against, Pearl Gonzalez? And a couple
quick finishes as well.
Yeah, and Cooper, yeah, but she wasn't, you know. This is a step up here. I think the wrong fighter's favorite. I sincerely do. I think Calderwood, this isn't just because of the line. Calderwood will win this fight.
Yeah, see, for me, it comes down to the line. The issue with Joanne Calderwood is you look at the stats on paper and they're all there, but you mentioned it yourself. Mentally, where is she at? And because we don't know where she's at mentally, good dog play? Absolutely. This price? Absolutely. But if she's the favorite, I don't know that I touch her in this situation. So she's notorious for, she was in a relationship for many years in Scotland with a coach fighter by the name of James Doolin. Her and James Doolin had a falling out. She left that gym. She relocated to TriStar. Those performances all around that time, not very good.
Yeah.
You see her physical shape during that time? Not very
good.
But
you saw the post-TriStar.
Exactly. So
rejuvenated TriStar fighter spinning. Back fist, aggressive.
Yeah, and she's aggressive and she's getting back in good shape. And then, you know, making 115 is always a question mark for this girl. I mean, 125, that would be the perfect weight class.
Yeah, she's kind of chunky.
She's too big for 115, she's too small for 135. So because she's in technically no man's land, no women's land, it's just not a good necessary spot for her. Can she win? Absolutely.
Cavillo's not very big. I don't know if you guys can get the graphic up.
Cavillo's small, but she's like, a wrestling.
How big is Cavillo? She's 5'3"? We don't have the height there, right?
Well, here's the thing you got to take in consideration, that she's 5'4", basically...
She's, what's Calderwood, like 5'6"?
She's basically the same size as all of her training partners at Team Alpha Male. That's just how they're built. That's just how they fight. She's a stock wrestler. She's powerful. She has a good submission game. Calderwood's a former...
Striking, very rudimentary, Cavillo.
Oh, and Joanne Calderwood's a former European Muay Thai champion. I mean, she's leaps and bounds better on her feet. The issue is that if it's continuously getting taken to the ground, it's going to exert a lot of energy having to get back up all the time. So you factor in that I had a necessarily not the greatest weight cut. And the one thing, this is an X factor, Gabe, that I would never, you know, I don't advise you bet money based on this one little stat, but this is just little stats that I always keep in mind, is that James Doolin's actually coaching a fighter on the card. He is going to be in presence.
He's in the building backstage.
And if that throws her off, if that's the thing that causes her to overthink one little thing, then I don't like it. But because
you
of the
know
dog
what?
Money,
no, Cody,
because
you
of the dog money.
Their paths are probably crossed. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I get it. I know what you're saying with that. One thing, too, and I hate breaking down fights so simplicity that, well, you know, Cavillo's the wrestler and Calderwood's not.
Yeah.
And we've seen historically, let's be real, the British male fighters, and The Europeans are not the best wrestlers. Yeah. You know, they don't grow up wrestling, right? There's no.
It's not offered in a high school, you know?
Exactly. But with that being stated, and it's funny because you say that, because normally I don't put much stock in where the fight is.
Right.
Talked about it before. I've seen Canadian cards where the Canadian fighters were 2-6.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, you know, in the old days, Brazilian fighters would win in Brazil a little bit more. Remember, we had Reed Kuhn on all the time, and it was like, you know, 56% or whatever compared to the others. But that sort of equalized. A little different with Scotland. I actually do put a little bit of credibility into the home dynamic of Scotland. I really do. Their prideful nature, their violent nature. You're really going to have to either submit them or kill them to win the fights there. That Ray and Felder fight's going to be a great fight.
Terrific fight.
Yeah, you're really going to have to kill them. And also, quickly on this, I know we're out of time, but if Cavillo takes her down, you know the Euros, they don't like the takedowns. They boo quickly. We see quicker stand-ups, dude.
Fair.
You know what I mean? So if you're not doing a lot of damage, and you know, if Cavillo gets her down and it's just does holding or doesn't doing anything, they will stand it up. Who are you picking in the fight?
I'm going to lean towards definitely the over. I think this fight's definitely going to hit the over. It's going to go the distance, but I got to lean with Cavillo. I don't like the fact that she's a big favorite. And for
as
that
Donald
reason,
Trump would say, wrong!
I can't get much value out of her. But here's the one thing I got to mention about, look at if you're in America and you're going to put these American guys. Yeah, okay, half your roster is American. You go to Canada and you're going to use the best Canadian guys. Okay, fine. We've got a dozen Canadian guys on our roster. You go to all these different places. Brazil, we got 100 Brazilians on the roster. When you go to Scotland, you have two people from Scotland on the card. So you fill up the card with guys that have no business being in the UFC, but hey, it's a local ticket seller
exactly.
there. Calderwood's not in that situation. She's a bona fide UFC star. She should be fighting at this level. Stevie Ray is not in that situation. He is a top
player. We've only got 1 minute. Who do you like in the Ray Felder fight? I'm going with Ray.
He's got a lot more distance. Felder has got a little bit gun shy. And when you talk about that crowd, they are live in Scotland. And you talk about the early stand-ups, I like that. But what I like even better, Gabe, is whenever a Scottish fighter lands a strike, the place goes nuts. And whenever the foreign fighter lands a strike, nothing really happens. So I
like the time zone too. A lot of sometimes, you know, like when you fight in England, it was a disadvantage a little bit. They had the card live at 6 a.m. there.
Yeah.
Like literally. So the crowd's obviously not going to be the same. This starts at, noon Eastern. We're talking 6 o'clock there. It's Sunday night there, all right? They're already drunk on a typical Sunday in Glasgow. You throw in UFC fight night, it's going to be off the hook, man.
Yeah, I'd have to say so. And, I mean, for the North American crowd, being able to wake up at midday on a Sunday, Sunday afternoon, and watch some fights, sign me up.
One Sunday closer to football as well. We got to get out of here. Check out Cody and Pat Mayo for a fantasy perspective of this on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page. Game Time Decisions continues.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
All right, let's talk some Minnesota Viking football. I'm really enjoying the National Football League team-by-team previews. It's hard to believe we're already in to the NFC North right now. Yesterday, we talked about the Green Bay Packers. I do believe the Packers are going to have a very, very successful campaign this year. But it doesn't mean that the Minnesota Vikings can't make the playoffs as well. 2016 was a disappointing season for the Vikings. They were beaten down by injuries as the season went on. They were blazing out of the gate, man. They were blazing out of the gate. Of course, Sam Bradford was brought in after Teddy Bridgewater's unfortunate injury. And for the record, props to Teddy Bridgewater. We saw just yesterday he was on the field for the first time without a brace. You know, people were talking about Teddy potentially never playing again. Teddy's going to play again. He's not going to be playing this year, but it's interesting because he's going to be ready next year, but the Vikings didn't re-up the contract. Bradford's in the final year of his contract right now with the Vikings, but we'll get to all that stuff momentarily. All right, the Vikings have been a covering machine, man, since Mike Zimmer's gotten there. 2014, the Vikings covered 62% of their football games. 2015, they covered 82% of their football games. Last year was an off year. You know, they finished 8-8 straight up. They were still 9-7 against the point spread. The Minnesota Vikings have been the most profitable team to bet on over the last three, 4 years in the NFL. Linesmakers have always had a hard time adjusting for the Vikings. They're not a public team, but wise guys do bet on them. And I looked at, you know, I'm actually surprised the odds makers aren't sleeping on the Vikings. And it's funny because if you talk to Johnny Sixpack and, you know, you ask, what do you think about the Vikings this year? Oh, Bradford sucks. They don't know. Adrian Peterson's gone. You know, they were 8-8 last year. You ask just a casual fan about the Vikings, and they're not going to tell you very many positive things. You ask a lines maker, you ask a professional gambler about the Vikings, and they're going to get a grin on their face. Vikings, yeah, Vikings. Vikings were on like a 22-3 ATS run. They covered like 22 out of 25 football games 2 years ago. Last year, they came smoking out of the gate. They hit the wall with injuries. So let's look at the numbers. The Vikings are 25-1 to win the Super Bowl this year. I was a little bit surprised. I was expecting the Vikings to be in like the 40-1 range. The odds makers respect the Vikings. Vikings, only 12-1. Only 12-1 to win the NFC. Once again, what does that tell you? You know, you don't hear anybody in the mainstream media talking about the Vikings favorably, but the odds makers, they're only going to give you 12-1 to win the conference. They're not sleeping on the Vikings. The Packers are such a public team, so the Packers are the overwhelming favorites to win the division, and rightfully so. They're better than the Vikings are. But how much? I don't know. Vikings are plus 320 to win the division. The win total is 8.5. All right, so let's jump in and take a look at the teams. As I mentioned, it sucked. It sucked for Teddy Bridgewater. He's a good kid, good quarterback. I like Teddy Bridgewater a lot. I'm really glad to see that his the surgery and the knee and the reconstruction is coming along fine. Like I said, he was on the field without a brace. He's going to be on the physically unable to perform list to start the season. But you know, nevertheless, Teddy Bridgewater will be playing football once again. The question is, where is he going to be playing? I don't know. Where is Sam Bradford going to be playing next year? I don't know. Listen, I've never been a big Sam Bradford guy, and I was underwhelmed when they brought him in. I was like, man, I'm not even sure he's better than your quarterbacks. Who is it? Sean Hill. I was like, I don't even know if Bradford's better than Sean Hill is. Like, I didn't like the move. I always thought Bradford was overrated. But at the same point in time, Bradford's never really been on a good football team before or had talent to work with before. We saw in the first 5-6 weeks of the season last year when the Vikings were healthier, you know, he was very successful. How successful was Bradford? Not only did he lead the NFL in completion percentage last year, he set an all-time record, man. The guy completed 71.6% of his passes. That's an all-time NFL record surpassed Drew Brees. 20 touchdown passes, only 5 interceptions, responsible with the football. Now, clearly, you know, it's a lot like Carson Wentz. And you look at Carson Wentz's numbers, and there's a lot of checkdowns going on here. And let's not kid ourselves. Sam Bradford wasn't throwing the ball down the field very often. But the Minnesota Viking offensive line sucked. They had no ground game whatsoever. And, you know, when I say they had no ground game, they rushed for 75 yards a freaking game, man. Are you kidding me? Like 75 yards a game? You should be rushing for 75 yards and a half. All right? Like 75 yards a game? You're not going to win in the NFL like that. But they've addressed this in a big way. I'm a big Dalvin Cook guy, man. Dalvin Cook is a hell of a running back. He's going to be an impact player for the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, you look at Dalvin Cook, breakaway speed. He's a smaller dude. Smaller dude, almost like a Warwick Dunn type. You know, smaller guy, but breakaway speed. But he's just a natural running back, man. The guy just sort of glides out there. He makes it look easy. And the thing about Dalvin Cook is that coaches will like is he doesn't get hit that often. Like, it's just some guys, you know what I mean? Some guys get hit hard, you know, and they're kind of, you know, Eddie George is big and tall. His knees used to take a beating. Dalvin Cook will sort of glide out of bounds. LeSean McCoy is sort of known amongst running backs as he just has that, he knows how to take a tackle and sort of fall forward and like sort of like kids in the park as opposed to awkwardly getting jarred. Dalvin Cook just sort of has that natural instinct. He's got great footwork. I'm very high on Dalvin Cook, guys. I like him a lot, and I like bringing in Latavius Murray a lot as well. You talk about speed, man. You know, Minnesota Vikings have more speed in their backfield right now than Walter White had in his drawer on Breaking Bad. All right, these guys are fast, man. You got Dalvin Cook, you got Murray coming out of the backfield. That's a lot of little just dumps, man, that Bradford can just, hey, and they're going to pop it. You know, Diggs is good. Diggs, you know, Diggs isn't a legitimate number one star guy, but he's very good. Hey, Kyle Rudolph is a freaking stud. The offensive line has been upgraded through free agency. There's a lot to like about this offense. They're responsible. They're going to have a ground game. Their offensive line is improved. I'm a fan. I like this offense. You know, the Vikings scored 20.4 points per game last year. I think they're going to add 3 points to that. I think the Vikings can get up to about 24 points a game. And they got a rock-solid defense. You know, you look at teams that score 24 points a game. You know, the Titans, like good offensive teams, score 24 points a game. The Vikings are only a field goal away from this, and they're going to get it with the addition of the offensive line bolstered up. They're going to get it with the addition of Dalvin Cook and with Murray as well, like the offense. Defense never going to be an issue under Mike Zimmer. Let me reiterate this. I'm a big Mike Zimmer fan, all right? I think the guy's a great coach. I like Zimmer a lot. They only give up 19.2 points per game, fifth least in the National Football League, and that was without a ground game, you know? So think about that. Like, the Minnesota Vikings couldn't run the football, so their defense is on the field more than it should have been. And they were still the fifth best scoring defense in the league. They were third ranked against the pass, man. They only gave up 207 yards a game. All right? The Vikings are hard to pass on. I'd like to see you guys shore up the run a little bit. 120 a game is a little bit too much. But I like the draft pick of Jahlil Johnson, big 315-pounder out of Iowa. Just take his fat ass and drop him right in the middle there, man. That plugs up some holes. You know what I'm saying? Nothing complicated about that. Hey, Harrison Smith's going to be much healthier. Harrison Smith had a big impact last year, but when he wasn't 100%. Harrison Smith's one of these glue guys. Nobody knows Harrison Smith. You know, he's not on TMZ and he's not getting highlight reels. He's a hell of a strong football player that sort of like brings this defense together. I'm a big Xavier Rhodes fan. I guess you guys can tell. I like the Vikings, all right? Schedule. Fifth easiest schedule in the league, supposedly. I don't know, man. Is any schedule easy? Is any schedule easy in the National Football League? I mean, we've been seeing all these schedules. Oh, you know, fifth easiest this, seventh easiest this. I don't know, man. They're playing the NFC South and the AFC North. Besides the Browns, there's no free passes here. Three of their first four games, though, and five of their first eight are at home. The Vikings have an opportunity to get off to a good start here. They open up at home on a Monday night against the Saints. I think they can win that game. They're going to go to Pittsburgh. They're not going to win that game. But then they host the Bucs and the Lions. I think they can win those games. They're at Chicago. They're versus Green Bay. They've always played Green Bay tough. I lost $55,000 in the Super Contest because Minnesota beat Green Bay. Trust me, I know. Baltimore versus Baltimore, at Cleveland, at Washington, versus the Rams, at the Lions, at the Falcons, at Carolina. That's the tough run right there. At the Lions, at the Falcons, at the Panthers. That's not a fun way to spend weeks 13, 14, 12, 13, and 14, etc. But look, last year was a disaster. Everything that could have went wrong for the Vikings did go wrong last year, and they were still an 8-8 football team. The win total is only 8.5 this year. Not only do I like the Minnesota Vikings to go over 8.5, I love the Minnesota Vikings to go over 8.5. And not only that, I'm telling you right now, here's the first bold prediction throughout. This is the boldest one yet, but not really, because they're a damn good football team. Minnesota Vikings win double-digit games. Minnesota Vikings are a 10-6 football team, if not better. 10-6, if not better. All I need is 9 wins to win the bet. The Vikings are going to the playoffs.
Ezekiel Elliott. Carl Anthony Towns, Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right. You know, I can't wait to start talking football with Steve Merrill. Steve Merrill joins us right now, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the covers experts as well over at CoversExperts.com. Always a pleasure, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, Gabe, doing well. And Covers actually just the other day sent out their conference preview schedule, and I'm going to be doing, it looks like, the SEC, Conference USA, and ACC over the next few weeks here towards the end of July, so keep an eye out for those.
All right, good stuff. And, yeah, you and I will start talking some NFL football. I'm doing weekly college previews with Mark Lawrence every Wednesday. We're going through the conferences. But I started about 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, maybe three, whatever it is. Yeah, I guess it's 3 weeks ago. Hard to believe. Team by team NFL. I'm going to revisit it, but I'm just sort of looking at the win totals, the odds, the division odds, and the futures. And I just did the Minnesota Vikings, Steve, and you know this is a betting man. I was talking about this, that, you know, the mainstream public never talk about the Vikings. The media never talk about the Vikings. There's no love for the Vikings coming into this year. But all Mike Zimmer does is cover numbers, man. And, you know, even last year, the poor guy's eyeball fell out. He lost his retina. Yeah, you know, like the guy, and nothing went right for them. They were still 9-7 against the spread. The Vikings have been money makers for four straight years, Steve.
Yeah, and I think in the NFL, we talk about it every year. You really kind of have to take a regression to the mean approach. You know, teams that were really good 1 year usually regress a little. Teams that are really bad usually get better. Now, obviously, the last couple seasons, that hasn't exactly worked. Like, Jacksonville has remained god-awful, you know, every year. Patriots have remained fantastic, and New England probably is the team to beat again. But otherwise, those teams in the 7-9, 9-7 range, you know, teams like the Vikings, I think you can find some upside. And last year, I was big on the Raiders and the Bucks, as you know. They both won outright as dogs in week one. Oakland was good all year until Carr got hurt. But Tampa started to turn it on at times. I still feel like this could be a good year for Tampa as well. I think Winston will continue to improve.
We're going to get to Tampa next week. I was with you, Steve. Last year, Tampa, I gave like 10 bet bold predictions for the NFL. And I remember Tampa making the playoffs was one of them. And you and I talked about it. And, you know, people are high on Tampa again this year, sort of pushing them in, penciling them in. This is their year. I'm not ready to do it. I want to, you know, I got to wait and show me attitude. But I'm an idiot, Steve, and I believe this is the year the Jags finally don't completely suck.
Yeah, you know, one adage I use in sports betting all the time, and you can use it in the financial markets with stocks and everything else, you know, when there's a good situation, you know, and things line up from like a technical perspective, you know, in handicapping either, you know, financials or sports, and it doesn't play out, that's a real red flag for me. And I'm not saying things lined up for Jacksonville last year, but for the last couple of years, we kept saying, like, you know, this might be where they turn the corner. They haven't done it yet. So now that's kind of a red flag for me, and I really need to see them do it first. It wouldn't surprise me, but I almost feel like we're trying to catch that falling knife with Jacksonville year after year.
Yeah, Gus Bradley was a horrible coach, though. Second worst coach in the history of the National Football League with like a 200 winning percentage. But nevertheless, we'll save the football. Guys in the booth right now are like, man, come on, Morency. We make graphics for these baseball games. So let's talk some baseball, Steve. What do you make of this? It's almost a wait-and-see attitude again. It's like, yeah, the Dodgers were killing it all the time.
Right.
You know, the Brewers were hot, but are they going to be, are they going to continue this this after being off since what, last Sunday, Steve? It's the longest break that they'll get in the entire season. Let's start off with the Cubbies, 5.5 back right now. Of the Milwaukee Brewers. Cubs bring in Jose Quintana yesterday, but they're not hitting with runners in scoring position at all. They're at Baltimore tonight, your backyard, Steve. So Cubs out, Orioles game's essentially a pick 'em at minus 110. Montgomery versus Gossman. Montgomery, winless on the road this year, 0-4. And then conversely, Baltimore were cold going into the break. They had lost 7 of their last 10.
Yeah, we often talk, you know, I'll bring football up again just to get everybody confused, but we always talk about the bye week in football,
yep, you know,
in college and pro, how it's kind of a momentum reverser. You know, teams that are hot don't need the bye week.
It often hurts teams.
Right. Remember the Eagles had that early week 4 bye last year for no reason. They started 3-0 and they went like 1-6 after that, I think. Yet on the other flip of the coin, and historically bad teams that have a bye week usually are pretty good bets the week out, and it makes a lot of sense. You know, if things are working, you need that momentum, it breaks it up. If you're cold, you need the extra prep time, and the reset button needs to be pushed. And I think you could say the same thing about the NBA All-Star break. You could say the same thing about baseball. And, of course, it's a day longer now. It used to restart on Thursday. Now it's Friday. So these guys, for the majority of these players, they've been off for four full days, which in baseball is an eternity when you play almost every day. And I think you definitely have to tread lightly. My power rankings have been very spot on this year. You know, I told you early in the season, Gabe, that I was taking a different approach this year. I was looking at what was really happening on the field. You know, it didn't feel right to have the Astros number one all those weeks. But, hey, it's turned out to be correct. You know, they're still number two, and they have the second-best record in baseball. The Cubs, meanwhile, it doesn't feel right for me to have them in the middle of the pack. I still feel like they're as good as anybody talent-wise. But they've yet to prove it. So we'll have to see. I do make the prediction that the Cubs turn it on here in the second half. And if that's the case, you know, maybe you start riding them. But I don't know if you have to jump on them tonight.
Yeah.
You know, get a win or two. Wait for a win or two. There's plenty of games to go still.
Yeah, I know. You got to be patient with this stuff. I want to focus in on this division. It's because I find it interesting. The Cards are tied with the Cubs, but you don't get, you know, the Cards. I always get the feeling the Cards are about to fade any day now. Pirates are sort of right there if they can get on a roll. So it's, you know, these games start to count now. You know, Steve, coming in as far as form was concerned, both Gerrit Cole and Mike Leake have both been terrible. So if there wasn't this layoff, I'd be all over the over 8.5. But I don't know. They've been off all week.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been a higher scoring season in general. Of course, that didn't translate to the All-Star game. You know, another game goes under 9, and it was actually 8.5 by game time. When we did the show on Monday, the line was 9. I was saying how no games had gone over. I actually started looking at it, and, you know, home field was no longer a factor. I thought the scoring would increase. So that was actually a little surprising. It was that low scoring, especially with extra innings. But the ball has been traveling better this year. Will the layoff affect these guys? You know, I don't think so, but the pitchers are used to it. You know, these starting pitchers are in their normal
good
rotation
point.
Of 4 or 5 days
good
off.
Point.
The offensive guys aren't, so that is a concern with the overs.
That's a great point you raised, Steve. You're right. These guys, whatever. Maybe they got one or more extra day of rest and they actually like it. Well, the batters are cold. Yeah, it's such a game of routine and rhythm. You know, like you haven't swung a bat like that in 4 days. All right, Phillies and Brewers. Speaking of the Brew Crew here. We got the Brewers -165. I guess, you know, the odds maker is starting to catch up a little bit, but I'm not put off by this number. This is pretty much my cutoff, Steve, about betting baseball favorites. I'd even like the 170, 175. I'll do it once in a while. But you know, I don't mind, look, 163. Maybe we can get a 161 or something like that. You know, the Brew Crew were scorching. They're 9-2 before the break. The Phillies are a train wreck. Pavetta's on the hill tonight. He's given up 7 home runs in his last 4 starts. And as we know, Steve, the Milwaukee Brewers have hit more home runs than any team in baseball.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Cubs in this division, 5.5 games behind Milwaukee. Who would have thought? And they're the third biggest money burners. The Cubs are down 21.5 units. Only Philly and San Francisco has lost more money this year. And then you flip to Milwaukee, who has the 5.5 game lead. They're up 17.5 units to the money line.
Unbelievable.
And
what do you make of this,
and they're
Steve?
The third best.
They're the third best
in baseball.
I talked about this with Cam, and it's unbelievable. And we do the market watch. I know if you bet $100 a game, you're down $2,100 betting on the Cubs this year. But what do you make of this, Steve? Because you just said before you think the Cubs are going to go on that run. The Cubs are still -200 to win a division.
Right.
And the Brewers are +210. And I told Cam, I'm like, man, if it was +310, I'd probably do it. +210, can the Brewers hang on, you know, spotting 5.5?
Well, and here's the problem. You know, one of the reasons playing teams that are down 21 units now might make you money historically is because nobody wants to play them. That's not the case with the Cubs. Like you just said, they're still a divisional favorite with a losing record and 5.5 back. Normally you fade a team like Milwaukee,
yeah,
who's up 17.5 games on the money line, but no one's playing them still. And by the way, the only two teams that are more profitable this year, the Astros and Dodgers, who are the two best teams in baseball.
Yeah, so why mess with it, right? Keep it simple.
Right. And like I just said, the two teams that are worse, the only two worse than the Cubs are the Phillies and Giants, who are dead last in my power ranking. So it ain't rocket science, you know.
Yeah, so we should be taking Baltimore and Milwaukee tonight.
Well, and the thing is, you know, like you said, which Baltimore team shows up? They've been ice cold the last month or so. And by the way, well, you do see momentum after the break. I've talked about this before, but going into the break last year was the only time all season Chicago wasn't number one in my power rankings, and the Giants were number one. And they've been maybe the worst team in baseball since then. And then you look at a team like the Blue Jays the last couple
seasons. Yeah, the Blue Jays have been the kings of this. Yeah, you're right, the Blue Jays.
So, you know, wait for a couple wins. Don't try to catch that knife tonight. Wait for a couple, you know, ride that momentum, basically.
I totally agree with you. I think we wait. Like, by midweek, we'll see who's riding that 4 or 5 game win streak, because somebody will come smoking out of the gate. You're right, man. It's inevitably going to happen. All right, we've only got about 4 minutes here. Let's talk some NASCAR. Let's blast through some NASCAR. They're going over to New Hampshire right now. And, of course, that's Joey Logano's home track. I can't believe it, Steve. There's only 8 races left right now before the playoffs begin. Just like the baseball games, the race is starting to mean more and more. They're going to be back in New Hampshire in late September for the playoffs. Kenseth. Kenseth, you got to look at Kenseth, although you talked about it. Kenseth's on his way out with Joe Gibbs Racing, but it's hard to overlook the fact Kenseth has won two of the last three races here and three of the last seven. I'm not taking Kenseth, but I think it's our, you know, jurisprudence to tell people that, hey, you know, Kenseth is pretty dominant here.
Yeah, and the other race he didn't win last fall, he came in second. He's been second, first, and first the last three races. But that's just how it is on this track. The same guys do well year after year. Kevin Harvick was first and fourth last year. Kyle Busch has been eighth or better in four of the last five, including the top three in three of those six, and he's Kenseth's teammate. So, yeah, the usual suspects do well here, and that's Kyle Busch, Harvick, who's good everywhere, Matt Kenseth. Now, you know, a guy that's been really good this year on all tracks is Larson, and he has not been better than top 10 in the last four here, but he did finish second and third way back in 2014, which is really weird because he wasn't a dominant driver then. So we'll have to see what his practice times look like. You know, if he's got good practice times, Kyle Larson will be live as well.
And you're exactly right with this race. You know, sometimes I try to get cute and pull some longer shots out of the hat here, and I just don't see it. I don't think Ken's going to get it done. I'm sticking with the Gibbs Racing. They got to win eventually. Kyle Busch, but he's only plus 400. Two-time winner here. Last six races, he has two top fives, four top tens. They're due for some luck, Joe Gibbs Racing. Joey Logano, this is his home race. He needs to win, too. It's interesting. He won, but what do they call it, Steve? An encumbered finish. It's like that should be the title of my book, my life. Encumbered finish. So he lost the points.
I'm not even sure he's in the top 16 in points.
He's 17th now.
Yeah, he has a win and would not make the chase as of now, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, he got busted in the inspection. He's a two-time winner here, though. Get this. He's finishing the top five in four of the last five races here, Steve. Logano's going to be in the mix.
Oh, yeah. In fact, he finished 11th in the fall. He was third, fourth, and first in the other four, as good as anybody. And Keselowski, his teammate, finished fourth in the fall, outside the top 10 the two before that, but then he was second and first in two of the three before that, going back to 15 and 14. Their teammates, they neither have been that strong as they were the first couple months of the season, but this is a flat track. It's a one-mile track. It's not a cookie cutter, but it's a very generic track for guys that do well here. It's usually year after year, just like we saw last week. We'll say the same thing again this week. By the way, Truex Jr. is the second favorite in the odds. He has not been better than eighth in any of his last six starts here. So even though he's been dominant on the one and a halves, unless he is top five in all the practices, I'd probably leave him off this week at that price.
We unfortunately have to get out of here, but Kevin Harvick's already locked the spot in a win, but he won their last trip here. Last four trips here, he's got three top fives and a win. He's going to be in the mix. They're not rocket science guys this week. Denny Hamlin's, he's only 7-1, but he's a two-time winner, average finish of 10.4. And we got to get out of here, Steve, but my long shot, Clint Bowyer, 22-1, two-time winner here. I know it's been 7 years, but nevertheless, he likes the track. We got to get out of here, Steve.
Yeah, Jamie McMurray and Ryan Newman, they're good too.
Steve Merrill, check him out, prosportsinfo.com, onethecoversexpert.com. We'll come back with our plays of the day next.
In 2016, Scott Engel predicted an impressive second season from Melvin Gordon. Jake Seeley recommended Jordan Howard. Bobby McMahon forecasted a Jay Ajayi breakthrough. George Kurtz saw a big year coming from Matt Ryan. And Joe Galina picked Rashard Matthews as one of his top sleepers. These predictions turned fantasy owners into champions, and the same crew returns this year with more savvy calls in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package at rotoexperts.com. Don't miss the calls that create winners. Register now and enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
Baseball's back. All right, the Los Angeles Dodgers, these guys have been killing it, man. But how's the four-day layoff going to affect them? They did have a couple of guys that were at the All-Star game swinging the bat, et cetera, and Jansen was there as well. But you never really know how teams are going to react out of the gate, so be careful. Tread cautiously. But how the hell do I not take the Dodgers at minus 120? Like, how do I not do it? Kansas City Royals have been one of the best teams in baseball over the last month and a half, and I think the Royals are going to keep it up. Don't sleep on these guys. We'll lay the minus 112 with KC here. You got Pivetta on the hill for the Phillies. The guy's given up seven home runs in his last four starts, and he's taking on a Milwaukee Brewer team that crushes the freaking baseball like their fans crush Miller beers. Give me the Brewers. CFL football, I hate betting against my Montreal Alouettes. Come on, are they going to beat Calgary? The thing is, Calgary have lost the last three times in Montreal. You know why? They go to Super Sex. I've seen them there. I was outside, but I saw them. No, I was inside. St. Peter's love the clubs. Later points, Eskimos -4.5 and the Red Blacks and the Eskimos over the number. May the winners be yours.